Hello, it's Jeff. Just before we get to the show, just a friendly reminder to hit follow or subscribe on your podcast app so it's downloaded and ready to go.
The songs, the musicians, and the stories that bring them together. This is Records and Rock Stars with Jeff Woods.
Okay, let me put this in no uncertain terms. I'm in love with this record. It's incredibly intimate. It's a Sunday morning with coffee record, or it's a night in with somebody you can't get enough of. Before we dig into what we'll call the Something Easy album premiere special, let me tell you a couple things about him. He's not only been nominated for Canada's version of the Grammys, he's also won, including the Juno for the 2013 album Valley Heart. A musician and an actor and a father and a husband and a whole lot more than he's ever been before, and we'll get into what that means. Whose music has been featured in films and television. His eyes you don't forget. He's got a story of great romance that led to the family. We'll get into that a bit too. His 10th album is in the spotlight this time, the May 2023 release titled Something Easy, written, recorded, produced, at home no less, by our special guest from Toronto. Welcome, Justin Rutledge.
Hello, it's so good to be here with you, Jeff.
Thank you for being here and making the drive. We're in the beautiful town of Thornbury, Ontario, and you've been here before.
Such a beautiful town. It's so great to be back. Yeah, it's one of those picturesque, perfect places.
Isn't it? Yeah, this is so quaint. Mm-hmm. There's a ton of people that migrated up pre and during and post COVID. It's just one of those towns where, you know, it's like Cheers when you go out. Everybody knows your name.
Everyone needs one of those towns.
I think so.
Everyone needs to live in one of those towns.
And you've done that, and you've, I mean, you're a Toronto guy, but you've gravitated towards those small towns. For what reasons, and where have you been?
I was born and raised in Toronto, which I left at when I was 18, and I moved to England for a year, because that's where I thought I was meant to live. Moved back to Toronto, and about 5 years later, I tried my hand at living in the mountains out west in Canmore, like yourself. That didn't work out. Then I tried Vancouver and that didn't work. And then I sort of settled back in Toronto for the next 15 years. And about 7 years ago, I moved out to a little area in southern Ontario called Prince Edward County and bought a house there on the lake and lived there. And I needed to do some recovery there. I went sober, didn't have a drink for very 2 years while I lived there and needed to. It was probably the best 2 years of my life up until that point where I felt rejuvenated and more in touch with myself. And it was a very healthy transition for me. But then love drew me back to the city, to Toronto, and here we are today.
What I want to do is go through 8 songs of the 9 on the album. I love the fact that it's a 9-song record, and people sometimes put 12, 13, 14, 15. You know who put it best was Greg Keeler of Blue Rodeo. Mm-hmm. Whom you're very familiar with, somebody said to him, what is it about records you like? And we were talking about vinyl. And he said, I like the 20-minute side.
Yeah.
2 20-minute sides. It's a nice amount of music. And that's effectively what you have here.
Yeah. I grew up, Leonard Cohen's probably my favorite songwriter, and all of his early records are 8 songs, 4 songs a side. Some of those early might be 9. But it's just not about quantity for me. And I feel like, with at the 10th album, I'm releasing the 10th album in my career. I know I'm going to release another one in a couple years. I don't feel the need to fill it with songs, right? I feel like I regard a record sort of as a literal record of a certain period of time. And I always have, and I think each of my records, they sound like a certain period in my life. And this one definitely sounds like that as well. But I do feel as though, like, I don't have 14 songs worth of memories of this time to tell you about, Yeah. I've only got 9 this time. Maybe 10 the next time, but maybe 9, It also has to do with duration as well. My songs tend to be long.
You're unlike most artists, because I'll tell you this. Most artists can't remember which album their songs were on, even their massive hits, like Ask Keith or Mick or Bowie was a little clearer about what was what.
Yeah.
But a lot of them are like, what was that? what was that record again? I don't even know. And a part of it is because they made it 50 years ago. But
on 3 bottles of Jack Daniels a day.
Yeah.
And more things.
And more things than that. Let's start at the start. And the opening cut could not have been better placed as that. Tell us a bit about the song, Angry Young Man.
A lot of my songs are, I don't write songs to give answers. You know, all of my songs are vehicles for me to work through something or to try to figure something out about a situation or about a relationship or about myself. And there's a lot that I'm disappointed in about myself as a younger person. I wish I could have been a better young person. I wish I was better to my parents. I wish I was better to my friends. I just wish I could have been a more benevolent human, but instead I was pretty pissed off. And you know, like most people, you know, you're young and confused and the world's against you and you know what's right. And that's a phase that young people go through. But looking back now, I don't look back fondly at the way I treated a lot of people. And so this is a song called Angry Young Man, which is about how disappointed I am in my teenage years.
Son of a stranger.
the first of nine songs from Something Easy, the 10th record from Justin Rutledge from May 2023. These songs are so lovely. And what's amazing to me is that all these years later, not like yesterday, but a couple of years ago, you decided to learn a lot more than you'd known before, whether playing guitar, whether learning how to engineer a record and produce a record, and in your spare time, as it were, in the evenings, finding a bit of time to make this record. Tell us about the things that you learned that brought you to be able to make the record that you made.
So at the top of the pandemic, like most musicians, I was out of work. I wasn't playing any shows, but I had all these songs, right, that had to be recorded, but I couldn't go into a room with my other bandmates to record them. I put out a record every 2 to 3 years, and if I don't do that, I don't feel good about the cycle. You know, the cycle gets thrown off, and so I've been in so many great studios over the years. I've worked with so many great engineers, but I never asked enough questions, and I never invested in those relationships and invested the time into learning about, you know, what preamp should I get to record? How do you record a decent vocal? And what's gain staging? And all these technical terms that lead to recording an acoustic guitar, or, you know. So I had none of that. All I had was instruments at home. And so I relied on the help of a couple friends to get me started, because I had these songs that I had to get out. I had to learn how to operate a digital audio workstation, you know, and so many technical things that allowed me to get these songs down. You know, I essentially did the whole record at home, mapped it out, and then I'd send it to my drummer in Nova Scotia, and he'd lay down the drums. Then I'd send it to my friend Zach in Los Angeles from Death Cab for Cutie, and he'd do the piano. And then I'd send it to my bass player, and he'd do the bass. And so it was, you know, and now that's sort of how I'm continuing to work with two kids at home. I'm just laying down the groundwork at home and sending it to people, because I have no fucking time to do anything else but raise kids right now.
We're going to come to that.
Yeah.
So you dropped one name. I'll hand you a basket so we can fill it with a few more.
Okay.
You mentioned a couple of friends, notable friends, that you'd like to give credit for helping you rise up to the occasion of being able to record yourself.
So my friend Dan Burns, who is a producer based in Los Angeles, he's currently working with Taylor Swift right now. I reached out to him pretty much all the time with some really like verifiable dumb questions, you know, like how do I patch this? Like cabling questions, just the most idiotic novice questions, and he was more than happy to answer them. My friend Chris Stringer in Toronto, who runs Union Sound, was very helpful. My friend Josh Van Tassel, who's a very talented producer and artist in his own right, was very helpful, and he played drums on this record as well. So, you know, it takes a village to raise an idiot, and there you go.
That's good.
Yeah.
We'll come back to the other thing you've learned, and we'll come back to going back to school, which is, I find, you know, brave. But let's play another song before we do all that. A guitar will lead us in. The shake of a tambourine coaxes us further into a song called 17.
Mm-hmm.
And
Tom Juhas on guitar there.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Tom. Tom's been on this podcast with his wife, Joan Smith, and the Jane Does. He's a ridiculously good guitar player, isn't he?
He's unbelievably talented and a sweet guy to boot. And this was, this is the only song that Tom plays on the record. I couldn't play this lick. I wrote this lick, and I just couldn't get the timing right. It's difficult. It sounds slow and easy, but it's to get the timing right over and over again, because it's start to finish. This lick goes throughout the whole song. Tom was the guy to do it.
It was Something Not Easy on an album called Something Easy. It's the new album from May 2023. Justin Rutledge. Here it is, 17. Thank you.
can hide on you. Come and find me where the days are green. 17, 17. I can meet you in the afternoon. We can talk until we're out of tune. Kiss me like we're on the silver screen. 17, 17.
17, we're two cuts deep into the new album from Justin Rutledge. I alluded to learning. Post-secondary education is one, and the other one is learning how to play your instrument to a greater degree, I guess. Tell me about taking lessons and why and how and where and who.
Well, it's funny because the pandemic really spurred a lot in a lot of people, but I decided to take this forced time off of touring and shows and music and really put it to use and make some lemonade. So I've never actually had guitar lessons in my life, and because of that I've developed some bad habits. And so during the pandemic I called my buddy Steve Briggs, who's an amazing musician and runs a great school called Kitchen Music Studios out in the East End of Toronto, and I said, Steve, can you teach me some scales? I don't know where to start, and I want to learn some scales. I don't know how to play a scale. So I did a few months with him, and I gotta say it was night and day. You know, I sort of, as a songwriter, I understand basic theory, like the songs in G, the songs in F. This, I understand my keys, and I understand what chords. I understood what chords are in those keys. And when I started playing music, my first residency in Toronto was at the Cameron House, and I didn't have a band, right? So I was fortunate enough to put together this ragtag group of people. And after a while, Basil Donovan from Blue Rodeo ended up playing bass, and he's the one that taught me the number system, right? So in every key, no matter what you're in, you got your one chord, which is your tonic. You got your four chord. This is like standard country stuff. Like your four chord, let's say you're in G. Your one chord is the G. The four chord is the C. The five chord's the D. And the six chord is the E minor. And that can get you through most country songs. And I would stand up stage and I play these old country songs and I just call out four, do, 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 one, do, 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 because we didn't rehearse for these residencies at the Cameron House. So I'd just be calling out stuff all night. So I got my basic music theory lessons through that. But I've never played lead guitar because I've always worked with great lead guitarists. So I never found the urgency to do that. And I've always been more into songwriting than shredding. So, but because of that, and over the pandemic, I was like, man, I want to learn how to shred. So called up Steve and learned some valuable lessons that I continue to build on and employ to this day. And I played aside from 17, I played all the guitar solos on the record and everything. And I've never done that. I've never played a solo on any of my albums.
I'm going to be curious in a second to ask you about who you bounced this stuff off, because when you're working alone in a vacuum, sometimes it's hard to have objectivity about how it's going. But before we do that, let's play the next one on the record. It's a cut three. Reminds me, he's been on the podcast, great style and grace, from Toronto to Pat Robitaille. You ever met Pat?
I've never met him, but I know that name, and we've been on shows together and festivals, and I think I look forward to meeting him in the future.
He's a lot like you. He's a gentleman. And this reminds me a bit of his stuff. Say a few words about it before I hit play.
I'm a new father, and I had this dream once about taking my kids through the woods. It was a really snowy scenario, and I'm walking with my oldest son, Jack, through the woods, and we're trying to outrun these people that are following us, and you can sort of see their shadows through the trees, and I'm just trying to protect my son, at a certain point, these people that are following us, I catch a glimpse of one of their faces, and it's me. So all these people that are chasing us are versions of myself that I want to protect my son from. And there's something that happened to me when I became a parent where there's certain histories that I'm not proud of. And the way I interpreted this dream was, I want to be one thing. I want to be solid for my boys. And I don't want those people around anymore. So I wrote Cowards.
This love will make you kind.
be seen when the winter is getting me. Kids,
yeah, Jack and Louie. They're great kids.
Who picked the names?
Jack was easy. My wife and I sort of both, you know, months before he was born, we were certain of that name. And Louie, I think we named a couple hours before he was born. That was a tough one. but we both came to, weren't they? And the cool thing is they're not named after anyone that we know or any family member. They're sort of their own, Jack and Lou, they're their own things, you know. They're not, you know, so they can develop their own history.
They say that, you know, one of two things: you're so your name, or you kind of grow into your name. Yeah. How is it with Jack and Louie?
Jack's been a Jack. I mean, the great thing about a Jack is that it can be anyone.
Yeah.
Everyone knows a Jack that's like, he can be, you know, Jack's a great kid's name, it's a great uncle name, great grandpa name, you know, it's a versatile name.
It's a guy's guy name. It could be a girl's short form for Jackie. Like, Jackie. Jack's great. It's versatile.
Yeah, call him Jackie. And Louie, he can be Lou. He can be, you know, Louie's kind of lived up to his name because he's a tough one. 14 months of his life. Like
Louisville Slugger?
Oh, he slugged. It's funny because I have two little bats that I got from the Louisville Slugger factory in person. Jack's got one in his room, and I ordered one for Louie. Yeah, which is in his room. So, who knew?
And their ages are?
3 and 1.
Wow. So you don't know yet if there's an affinity for music, or do you?
Yeah, well, Jack loves music, and I will show you something afterwards that I don't know if we can. But he's got, you'll love it, actually. But he can hear a song. We didn't really do the Raffy thing, even though he is going to see Raffy tomorrow at Massey Hall. Just got a ticket. Anyway, I did this thing during COVID that I called Jack's Tracks, and he was really into my vinyl collection as when he was 21 months old or 22 months old. And I started posting things online, and we were living out in Prince Edward County, and the local radio station, County FM, called me up and they said, "Hey, do you want to do a show with Jack? Do you want to do a Jack's Tracks on County FM?" And I said, "Yeah." So he just picked the records. He'd pull one out from the shelf and he'd introduce it. I'd record it. And
smart kid.
Yeah, and my wife and I would pull up these things. I'll show you a video later. Maybe we can record it. But we would get the iPad and we'd flip through a song. We'd play a song and he'd go, "Sam Cooke." And we'd flip through and go, "Bowie." He'd go, played 2 seconds. Beach Boys. So he's got that. He's
and
got
great choices.
Great choices. Well, we raised him on the classics, right? Yeah, yeah. Instead of Wheels on the Bus.
Good.
It's a
one day.
Living in.
Doing.
There's a.
Doing.
Running through the.
Blood.
I'm a.
Bad boy.
Because I don't even.
Miss you.
I'm a.
Bad boy.
For breaking her. And I'm.
Free.
That's great.
He was he's 3 and a half now, but he was about 19 months when we recorded that.
He's pretty happy about it.
He sure is, yeah. gotta get them into the good stuff when they're young.
I mean, Tom Petty, you can't go wrong. No. I think I listen to the Tom Petty channel on SiriusXM more than anything.
Yeah.
Because of the people that are still doing current, you know, Mike Campbell has a show, his guitar player, and yeah. It's so good. And Tom's shows, before there was a Tom Petty channel, there was Tom Petty's Buried Treasure they'd play on one of the channels, Deep Tracks. And Tom was really funny.
Right.
He'd do these southern accents, and he'd ham it up, and I don't know, man, I miss him.
Yeah, I mean, he's got that. You're right. He's got a great sense of humor, and even in that documentary, "Run It Down a Dream," he's just, you know, there are these moments where, you know, I think he's talking about the greatest hits. The label wanted a greatest hits, right? But the deal was that they had to put like one or two bonus tracks on it. So he said, well, I had this song called "Mary Jane's Last Dance" kicking around, and I didn't know if it was any good or not, but I put it on and it sold 17 million records. So what the fuck do I know? You know,
Tom Petty, and the fact that I couldn't have imagined anyone else in the Wilburys with all those other guys than Tom. He was kind of the young guy. He was in his 30s, and we thought that those guys were old. Dylan and Orbison and obviously Harrison and Jeff Lynne, but they. The oldest was Orbison at like 50,
oh
barely, right? The passage of time is an interesting thing.
Keeps on happening, doesn't it?
God damn. That was sweet. That was Jack. And who knows what Louis will be like, because he's won.
Yeah, who knows? He's probably going to be a ball player, though, I think. I think he's just like, Louis's like a straight, I'm a boy, I want to play baseball, I want to watch hockey. Jack's more into the arts. I think we got those two kids. Who knows?
We'll have to talk about your lovely wife shortly, and the great romance that was, because I was flipping through wedding photos, and you guys got lucky.
We sure did.
There's some good ones. We'll come back to the other topic, that is going back to school and becoming an intern at easily one of the most famous places in Canada. But first, let's play another song. I'm going to wait to have you play Head for the Hills live. That's next in the sequence of 9 songs. It's song number 4. Let's jump over it and come back to it and play the first single. I love the line, "Let the beauty begin." And "Do you want to be someone else? All my life I've been looking to find something easy." Part of the lyrics to the song, "Easy," the first single from the album. Tell us a bit about it before I hit play on it, please.
This was the last song to come to me during the writing process. Well, I would record as I write. The great thing about having a studio at home is if an idea hit me. I still remember the night this idea, the melody hit me, which is how all my songs arrive. The melody comes first. And if I'm lucky, I get the lyric with it. And the lyric came with this song, and it was just, the melody is just a pentatonic melody. All my life, I've been looking to find something easy. And it was like I'd heard it before, you know. So please, if there's anyone out there who has heard this before, let me know to save me a lawsuit. I rushed upstairs that night and put the idea down, and you know, the rest of the song came about within a week. And it was sort of an ironic nod to the whole situation I was in, because I was probably going through the most difficult period of my life. And but it was nice to look back on some of the easier moments, and we'll all get there. We'll all get to that point. But I was trying to find those easy moments everywhere I could. And so this song sort of helped me find those in a very difficult time.
Thank you.
find something easy, something easy. Late at night, at the drop of a dime, something easy, something easy. Feel the days are getting long. Feels like the summertime is coming on strong.
There's Easy, the first single from Something Easy, his 10th album. He's our special guest this time, and he's got his guitar, and he's going to play after we go back to the record for a couple more here. A pretty female vocal, and there's female vocals all over this record.
There are actually four female singers on the record, five actually, but three of them are the sort of the choir that sang throughout the record, that the voice, the main voice of the record, and it's Lydia Purceau and Meg Contini and Jill Harris, who form a group called the Au Pairs, and they also play in a band called Dwayne Gretzky. And Lydia is a great songwriter in her own right. She's got a great career. And then on another song, I've got Felicity Williams of Bahamas, and my friend Kate Rogers sings on London. So, as I said earlier, I'm a big Leonard Cohen fan, and what he did is he had this juxtaposition always with his sort of arguably not the greatest voice, you know, but on every one of his records, he would pair his voice with these beautiful female vocals in the background. And I always love that juxtaposition. And so I kind of tried to do that these days, because I'm not a big fan of my voice. You know, I sing the way I sing, and that's what it is. But I've always been a fan of people who can really sing, you know? So, and especially I love listening to female songwriters and voices. So
I'll press play on it in a second. This song, Lioness, which is you at your finest, I think.
Wow.
And wonderful female. You're welcome. Wonderful female vocal and the guitar and the keyboard. It's beautifully put together. But before I hit play, what the heck? You went back to school.
Oh, yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, I sort of got, over the pandemic, I sort of got addicted to accomplishing things. You know, I spent 3 years at U of T and never finished my degree. And I reached a point in my life where I've got two kids. I can't, you know, if this pandemic is 10 years long, I don't know. We didn't know how long it was going to last. I got to get a job. I got to do something to support my family and to contribute. So, you know, over the pandemic, I did a one-year program at Humber College in Toronto that gave me a degree, a postgrad, that gave me a certificate and something that I could actually have on paper. And it was the sort of practical side of me that did that. And as a new parent who wants to contribute to an education fund for their kids, you know, I said, I got to get a job. I can't rely on the phone to ring, because it's not ringing. And so I went back to school for a year on top of raising a kid and making a record and maintaining a marriage and, you know, all those good things. And I just really, it's weird. Later in life, I got, in my 30s, I stayed on the couch. In my 20s, I stayed on the couch. You know, I was like couch, stage, bar. You know, in my 40s, I want to get things done.
Overachieving, beautifully achieving.
Catching up on achieving.
Yeah, well put. We'll come back to the place you ended up after the school as an intern and where that's led you after I hit play on this beautiful song, Lioness.
I write you to say,
See, your vocal's great. Humility will get you everywhere. Mary, the violin is the violin, right?
Yeah.
It's not a fiddle because the way it's played, it makes it a violin. We love the fiddle too. And what I really like is, and I don't know how you captured it, you can tell us that it's kind of a muted piano sound.
Yeah, that's me. I actually, my friend Miranda Mulholland played the violin and I did all the other instrumentation, and that's a felt piano. It's a software plug-in by, I think it's a Polish software developer. But
And it sounds a bit like a movie theme or something like it. Mm-hmm. A lot of your songs sound quietly cinematic on this record.
Thank you. Well, I'm a big fan of space and instrumentation, and I love creating, you know, on a song like Mary, I don't sing on it, right? So I wanted to create, I have Irish background. My mom was born in England, but my grandmother is Irish. My mom's half Irish. And I wrote this song about my grandmother, and I've always been a fan of Celtic music. Maybe a closet fan of Celtic music, you know, but give me a Celtic fiddle any day, you know. And so I wanted to write sort of a tribute to my grandmother. You know, she passed away about 20 years ago, but she was my favorite person. And so this song has definite Celtic elements, but it's also got some sort of modern elements underneath it that I tried to create this sort of dreamscape underneath it. And you know, just 45 minutes a night whittling away. Oh, what does this do? What does this do? You know, at home, you get time to figure it out, right?
All the things you just said all come to life in this song. I really love it. An instrumental called Mary. It's Justin Rutledge. Song Mary from our special guest Justin Rutledge. That would sound so lovely in a place like, oh, I don't know, Massey Hall.
Yes.
Tell us about your connection to this beautiful place.
So over the pandemic, when I went back to school, I had to do a couple of internships for my program. I studied arts administration, and I've worked closely with Massey Hall in the past, and it's a great organization, and not a lot of people may know that it's a charitable organization. It's a not-for-profit, and we own and operate these two halls, right? We own Massey Hall and Roy Thompson Hall. They've promoted a few of my shows in the past. So they did my shows at the Glenn Gould in Toronto, my show at the Mod Club with Rob from the Hip in 2019, and we also did another show at the Winter Garden Theater in 2015, 2014 with them. So, and I know Jesse Kumagai, the president, and Stefania, and I know a bunch of people there, and they're all good people. And I called up Jesse and I said, listen, I'm doing this program at Humber in arts administration, and I have 400 hours of internship that I have to fill up. Do you think you have a place for me? And he said, sure enough. And so I worked closely with Vanessa Smith, who runs the education and outreach department at the Corporation of Massey Hall and Roy Thompson Hall. And I didn't know they had this department. And so I worked with them for months, and they have some great programs. Share the Music, which is devoted to high school students. The Lullaby Project, which is an amazing program that links up songwriters and expecting mothers.
I love that.
Yeah. Lyrics and Legacies, which hooks up songwriters and seniors, and a program called LETS, which is stands for Learn English Through Song, which is dedicated to newcomers. And it really opened my eyes to what a great organization Massey Hall is. And, you know, long story short, I left my internship and I sort of continued working with them on a salaried basis after that, which is amazing. And so it feels really great to be a part of such an incredible organization that's doing great things. And we're opening up Allied Music Center, which is an amazing 7-story facility right behind Massey Hall, which has a 500 capacity club and 100 capacity theater. And it's going to change. It's going to be a real hub for the music community in Toronto and for music fans.
Now, you've played Massey Hall, haven't you?
I have. I was fortunate enough to open for Blue Rodeo there 3 nights. In 2006, I think. So it felt good just to sort of leave your gear there, take the streetcar home, take the streetcar to work the next day at Massey Hall. And,
off to work.
Yeah, and it's been great working there because I get to go in and, you know, do some tours and see it when it's empty. And it's just to be in that room when it's empty and to feel it.
It's magnificent.
Oh, gosh.
My first show was Ryan Adams. And my surrogate daughter, as I call her, that's another story for another time, bought me tickets to see Ray LaMontagne, my favorite vocalist of the last 20 years, mm-hmm. at Massey. And what a marriage of perfection, that voice, that artistry, those songs at that venue. You can't have enough legendary venues investing back into themselves, yeah. Like Massey Hall, like the Concert Hall. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the Cameron House earlier. Let's touch ever so briefly on that. We had Jake Chisholm, the seat that you're in recently. He had a residency there after Gordy Johnson of Big Sugar had one and went off on his own.
I took the residency from Jake.
You did?
Yeah, so oh. Jake did it for 7 years, and then he was Monday nights for 7 years, and then he ended, and I started in 2003, 2004.
I love that.
Yeah.
And then our friend Jamie Oliver and Big Tobacco and the Pickers has spent a lot of nights on those stages. Mm-hmm. I don't know, just I when I think of a club, not a big hall, but a club that represents so much creativity and has touched so many lives, it's really the Cameron House. Well, the Shoe is obvious, but the Cameron House has a real special thing about it. What does it mean to you?
Well, the Cameron is, it's where I learned sort of how to command a stage. You know, I didn't really, before I played the Cameron, before I did my residency there, I didn't really know how to communicate with band members. I didn't really know what I was doing. I didn't know how to do it because, you know, it's one thing to write songs, one thing to record them, it's one thing to put out a record. Then you gotta go on stage and play those songs. People at the Cameron who still run the Cameron understand that there is some development that needs to happen. And without that support of the Cameron House. I mean, I'd play terrible shows and I'd have Paul Cinella come up after me and he'd go like, that was a good show. You got to work on this. This is the owner. he'd come up to me, and he's the one who gave me the slot. And he's like, "You'll do better next week." You know, like he would actually give me real constructive criticism, which you don't get from bar owners. Like, and I'd be like, "Sorry, Paul, there are only four people here tonight." He's like, "Don't worry about it. That's not what we're about. You know, give it time." And he would say that for 6 months. There was no one in that room. And he'd be like, "Don't worry about it. You know, let's keep going." You know, any other bar owner would give you what, a month? I don't know. You weren't pulling people in the room, but Paul really believed in me and he wanted people to hear me. So he kept me on that stage until you couldn't fit another person in the door and we had to stop, you know?
That's great.
So, I mean, you don't get that kind of support from many venues that I know of.
No.
Not in Toronto anyway.
Well, it's not the Cameron House, but it is Wildwood's Blue Studio. You're in my 1857. This was the first house in the neighborhood, apparently. There was a barn over there, and there was nothing else. And then they built all around this little space. We're in the attic, as it were. And from soundcheck, you sound really good in here. It's a good room for you. And you brought a guitar, and so we'll get you to strap it on and play it. But let's go to cut 9 and hit play on another recording that you made. In a second here, about your time being a teenager, going across the Atlantic Ocean because you felt you needed to be somewhere. Before I do that, though, talk about your wife a bit, because you talked about Jack and Louie and all of your moving around and becoming a father, meeting somebody wonderful, and she's artistic in her own right. Mm-hmm. She's done some incredible work on television. Tell us a bit about her.
Well, my wife, Sarah Keenly-Side, is a real force of nature. She's the love of my life and the mother of our kids. And she is an insanely talented interior designer and ran her own company for many years. And then she was poached by HGTV Canada and had a show called Backyard Builds, which I urge people to check out. It's a great show. About all exterior renovations, backyard renovations. She did 4 seasons of that and gonna start up her firm again. Sarah and I, we met, it's interesting because we met later in life. We met in our mid-30s, you know, and I asked, I wish there was a more romantic way to say this, but I asked her out on Instagram.
I saw the thread.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, tell us what it looked like.
Well, so I'm sitting at home. I'm 4 months sober. I had just broken up with my ex. I'm feeling really good. Like there's something about, you know, it's interesting when you drink for 15 years and you just stop. About 2 or 3 months in, you get this energy about like, well, this is what a normal person's supposed to feel like, and you feel alive and you start waking up early and you start going for walks. And so but then I was like, how do I meet someone? Yeah, I don't go to bars anymore. This blows. So, but I'm Sarah and I actually met at, we were introduced at a Danny Michelle show that I was performing at. Anyhow, so we started following each other on Instagram and, such a 21st century thing. I was like, wow, this girl's really beautiful. And, well, she's really talented too. Man, it doesn't seem like she has a boyfriend.
Yeah, all the little sleuthing we do.
I think, oh, it looks like she hangs out at this place, but that's a... What am I going to do? Go there and order a ginger ale and sit at the bar and wait for her to come in every night? You know, like, how do I meet this person? And so I just sort of like... You can still see it on one of her posts. It's just me blatantly asking her out for a coffee. And we met the next... And we met... 2 days later, and that was it.
Because she responded positively.
She responded positively. It's all up there. She's like, yeah, sure, let's do it. And it was actually the anniversary of our first date 4 days ago. And I kept the receipt. I have the receipt, but we went to the Grenadier restaurant in Toronto and in High Park, and we had 2 coffees. I was doing my taxes later that year, and I found the receipt. So I framed it and gave it to her.
You romantic devil.
Yeah. So we're still, you know, I don't know what I'd do without her.
Made a couple of kids
and she's extremely supportive. It's fantastic. We're coming up on 8 years together. So
sweet.
Yeah.
Congrats.
Thank you.
That's so good. having the confidence in the relationship to know that we can do these kids, we can survive all of it. And
well, it was the first relationship that I've had where I could speak openly with someone. I didn't feel like I felt like I've been hiding things in every relationship I've been in, every one. And I feel like this was the first honest relationship I've ever been in, where I could say, you know what, something's bothering me, and she could say the same thing to me, and we could talk about it. You know, we could, and that was a foreign thing to me because I didn't come from those kinds of relationships where communication was a healthy vehicle for resolution.
It's the only way to fly, as you now know.
Yeah, it feels really good too.
I'm glad. Let's go back to London.
Yeah.
And you're how old, and you're there because you think it's the place you need to be.
Yeah. So interesting. When I finished this record, I was talking to someone at my record label, Peggy from Outside Music, and we were talking a bit about what the record is about. And I hadn't really thought of it as a whole, right? Because I was just working in silos, working song by song. And Angry Young Man is about my youth. 17 is about hanging out with my buddies in the ravines of Toronto, drinking. Lioness is about a certain thing that happened in my youth. In London is about, and I'm thinking, all these songs are about my youth. Have I reached that stage? Like, it's not an intentional investigation here. London, so when I was 18, I was sure that I wanted to leave Toronto for good. I was going to buy a one-way ticket to London, and my mom forced me to buy a return trip for a year later. And I had £200, which I thought was a lot of money. I was working at a butcher shop at the time, saving up. And I landed in London. And I sort of lived hand to mouth for a year for the first time. You know, I lived at a friend's for 2 weeks and ran out of money. Because £200 will only get you, at that time, 100 pints. And that's it. And so I had to find a job. So I started working at a pub downtown Soho, Covent Garden area, Holborn. And the great thing about traveling around then is that working at pubs is you would live above the pub. They would provide you accommodation. It wasn't the greatest accommodation. It wasn't quite squalor, but it was one level up. I just sort of learned. I stayed there for a year, did a bit of traveling, not much, but just really spent a lot of time alone, making new friends, making a lot of mistakes, doing a lot of drugs, you know, recovering, doing more, but just reading a lot of books, working hard. I was making £2 an hour, I think, you know, but I'd get my eggs and my Wonder Bread and I'd be good. I don't know, just something about those things. But that was also where I started to write a little more seriously. Like on my first record, I started to write Too Sober to Sleep and some of those songs in London, because I never really thought I'd be a songwriter. I didn't really put much stake in it, but I had a lot of time then. And looking back, it was a really pivotal moment in my life, because you never really think that when you're going through something, I'm going to miss this, or this is one of the best periods of my life. You know, when it's happening, it's hard to have that perspective. But funny enough, I was talking to a friend about this the other day. I used to live above this pub that was run by a former naval officer. I slept on a mattress in a room, and he had this parrot. This parrot would just, didn't have a cage, this parrot would just fly around the apartment and just shit everywhere. So you just had to, like, you had to be careful. You sort of had to sleep with the covers over your head. Like, years of shit just dropping everywhere. Like, and he would come to my room at night and sit on the corner of my bed and whisper my name and sort of like pat the back of my head for like 20 minutes. Go, Justin, are you awake? Martin, go away.
Martin the bird.
Martin. No, the owner of the pub. I'd be sitting on my bed at 3 a.m. trying to, so, you know, anyway, some crazy shit.
And it made you the songwriter and the man and the father you are today.
Yeah, that parrot. I owe a lot to that parrot.
It's cut nine on the nine-song album, and it's Justin Rutledge. It's London.
They were shepherds who lived here. Lonely men in their shirt sleeves. And they woke under lemon trees, and their daughters brought them salt wine and honey. London, I lost you. Where have you been? You're under the weather and under my skin. London, I lost you. Where have you gone? Don't let it rain on your only son.
Justin, you mentioned earlier about your connection and your relationship with and your abandoning of taboos. And I've had a very similar relationship with that and with relationships, period. You talked about communication. Very slowly have I learned that it is the main tenet of, of a successful relationship, being able to be you and being open to them being them and having those discussions. And I got the feeling with the very beginning of this interview, this conversation, angry young man probably had some bits and pieces of that relationship to booze. Tell us more about all of it.
I didn't think I had a problem, you know, and I love drinking. It's been a part of my life since my teens, and learned to drink more and better. And, you know, the short story is when I was 35, I was coming off like 5 years of cocaine use, and that started up as a Sunday night habit. And all of a sudden I'm doing it before I go to walk the dog, you know, like, oh, I'm going to just do a couple bumps before I take the dog to the park, you know.
Because that's normal.
And, you know, I think it was the combination of the booze and the coke that really just sort of, like, I can't live like this. I won't be able to live.
I won't live. Yeah.
You know, that was where it got to. And so I just stopped and I went to AA for a bit. That really, really helped. What helped even more was it actually got to a point where I sold my house in Toronto. And I said, you know what, if I'm going to do this, I got to leave this behind physically, because I can walk six blocks and score. And
yeah,
it's just too much here for me. So I actually did a huge reset. I sold my house and moved to Prince Edward County. Met Sarah. You know, it's funny. I always thought that when I was drinking, I was being a better me, like I'm easier to be around. I'm easier to talk to. I can talk to people easier. But when I found out what it's like to sort of face a day without any of those crutches and be happy with yourself and actually be the person that you are, that's a very difficult thing to do, right? Like, the person that you are is the person without that shit in your system.
Yeah, when you boil it down to who am I? And then it takes practice.
Yeah.
It takes time to become comfortable without those things and facing. And then slowly, I think, for me, although I still have a couple of drinks, I had three or four last night and quite enjoyed it. I put it into perspective and learned how to do it. But the practicing of being you without any of that stuff and getting comfortable with it, it's a new world, isn't it?
Yeah.
It takes time.
Yeah, because that's the thing. You wake up in the morning and, yeah, I got to live with this guy all day, you know? But then you're right. After a while, it takes time. And I took myself outside the city. I got a small place, lived alone for 2 years. And, you know, like I said, met Sarah. Then after 2 years, I started drinking again. And then the pandemic hit and I started drinking more. And so I stopped then as well. And so it's been about 3 years now where I don't really drink. I've actually had, after a couple of days with the kids, I've had a glass of wine with Sarah. But I'll just, you know, and there's no fucking prize for, you know, I'm not. The way I work now is like, it's just one day at a time. And if that day, I'm not keeping track. I'm not being hard on myself. I have reached a stage where I have a level of responsibility as a husband, as a parent, where like my priorities have shifted so much. And I am so far down the list on that list of priorities. Like, I come in last. So, it's as you know, it's such a complicated relationship with booze and drugs, and it's so complicated. And over the years, you've spoken to so many people, musicians, and that have struggled with that, because it's like, I equate it to, it's like showing up at the office every day and your boss puts a case of beer on your desk and goes, hey, okay, have fun at work, you know?
Yeah.
That's what sort of the music.
Yeah, you're your own liquor and drug control board, as they say. And one day at a time is really the greatest advice I could give anybody.
Yeah.
The thing that I got to understand about my relationship to it is that drink number one for me, whether it's a glass of good wine or a cold beer or whatever, is really wonderful because you're so in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
You're very lucid. You're not drunk yet, so that it tastes good. I can taste it all. I'm enjoying it. It's a social drink. Drink number two is pretty good too. Not quite as good. And then I stop. I'm like, that was nice. I can still drive,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't drain my bank account mm-hmm. because let's face it, we can get around the right, wrong people. And wake up the next day wondering, you know, what happened.
Yeah. I had a great admiration when I was I'm still obviously a musician, but it's just like, I feel like that part of my life is I was a different kind of person then. And I had a great admiration for, you know, 'cause I was coming home at 7 a.m. from the bar, you know, after lock-ins and all that
sure.
stuff. Like, and I'd see people going to work. I'd see families taking their kids to school. And there was a real sadness in me because that's what I wanted. I wanted to be the type of person to get up at 6:30 in the morning, make breakfast for their kids. That's what I wanted. And stumbling home at 6 in the morning as people are waiting at the TTC stops to go to work and work a long, hard day, that's what I wanted. Like, I wanted to, I've been living this fucking songwriter, musician bubble for so long that I'm like, I don't know.
It's pretty great, though.
Yeah.
Where you have found yourself in that you can still be the musician, still make the records, still mm-hmm. do the shows, still be in the music/entertainment world,
mm-hmm.
and make the breakfast for the kids too.
Yeah, you know, I get up every morning at 6 with Louie, and because he gets up first, I let Sarah sleep in. She gets Jack up, and Louie and I put Louie in the stroller, and we go for a long walk. I love it every day.
I love that you do. I love that you can. You did it right. One day at a time. Why don't we close the way I said we would close by having you do one of the songs off the record live and grab your guitar. Tell us a bit about it, Justin, if you would, before you play the song.
Yeah, sure. This is a song called Head for the Hills. And, man, it's living in a city like Toronto, probably like a lot of cities around the world right now, we're seeing a real exodus of artists, of songwriters, of musicians, of artists in general. And simply, it's affordability. I remember growing up and, you know, being a young musician, and I had a place in downtown Toronto on Trinity Bellwoods with a couple other people. I was paying $350 a month, you know. But I was able to afford that and go play shows at night and work at the bar a couple nights a week. And now I'm seeing some of the most talented people I know have to leave the city because they just can't afford it. And it's kind of the right thing to do at a certain point, I gotta say. And so I wrote this song called Head for the Hills about that and about just wanting a simpler life and about avoiding the traffic. Living kind of in a house like this, making bacon and eggs in the morning, taking your kids to school, you know, listening to the birds.
And having a little campfire in the backyard because it's not illegal. And
exactly.
And going down to the duck pond and having the Canada geese fly right over your house, practicing their landing on the pond just over there. It's pretty lovely. Still nice to rip into the city even when you do.
But then it's nicer to leave it.
It's so nice to leave it. Let's head for the hills. I recommend that you follow Instagram and Apple and Spotify and all the ways you can find music and find socials and find updates and find Justin and his son, Jack. singing Tom Petty, etc. So let's head for the hills. It's live here at Wildwoods Blue Studio, the Records and Rockstars podcast. Thanks, Justin Rutledge, who's about to play for you. Thanks, pal.
Thank you so much, Jeff. It's great to be here.
All right, here we go.
I'd love a piece of land, a quieter place to stand, to watch a moon rising with nothing to say, but settle my nerves today. I'd love a place to go, forest or field or meadow, raise a young family, watch the boys grow, tell them I love them so. Head for the hills, been running in circles. I wanna learn to be still. Head for the hills. Open the windows wide, the silence of siren outside. Draw back the curtains, rest here a while. I can see you for miles and miles. Head for the hill. Head for the hills. Been running in circles. I wanna learn to be still. Head for the hills. Is there anybody out there? Is there
Records and Rockstars Radio Podcast is available every Thursday. Be sure to subscribe for free through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your streaming audio so you never miss an episode. Rate and review to help us spread the word. All this and more at jeffwoodsradio.com.
I'm Andrea Askowitz.
And I'm Allison Langer. And we are the hosts of Writing Class Radio, a podcast, but we are so much more. We have writing classes. So if you are looking for live online classes where you can join a community, write to a prompt, get feedback, and get better, check out all our classes at writingclassradio.com. And listen to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts and at writingclassradio.com.
Come on a journey like no other, where you will discover many roads that will lead you to a happier, healthier, and more stress-free life. And the beauty is, you don't need any vacation time for this adventure. The journey will come to you. Join Avery Rich on your very own journey into yoga. Along the way, she will demystify yoga poses and guide you into a yoga posture or short sequence, all in less than 15 minutes. You have nothing to lose but stress. The Journey into Yoga podcast. It's not for people who like yoga. It's for people who don't like yoga. Follow or subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or at averyrich.com.